You're listening to Finding Direction, where we help people who feel lost find direction in their life. We interview the most passionate and fulfilled people and reverse engineer their life to uncover how they found direction. In doing so, we uncover strategies, tactics, and actionable steps you can apply to live a life of passion, fulfillment, and happiness. I'm your host, Stu Massengill, and thanks for listening in. What's up, everybody? This week's episode is brought to you by Audible. And if you have not heard of Audible yet, this is an absolute must-have, an absolute must-add to your tool belt and to your daily life. Now, a little bit about Audible. They are a leading provider of spoken word audiobooks. Basically, you can find any book you would ever imagine in audiobook format on Audible. And a couple books that I personally have listened to on Audible, and honestly that have been the most impactful books in my life, are two that I'll recommend for you that you can basically dive right into. The first book is called The Defining Decade. And I know on this show we talk a lot about figuring out your life, your purpose, and what you want to do with your life. And this book basically, Dr. Meg Jay, she really dives into a little bit more of the science behind how to figure out what you want to do with your life. She was a counselor at a college, and basically through seeing so many people go through this question of what do I want to do with my life, she really went into this pretty big study around it. So that's a phenomenal book. Absolutely, absolutely recommend that if you're wanting to figure out what you're doing with your life. And the second book, which this is hands down absolutely the most profound book I've ever read in my life, the biggest book that changed my life, and it's called How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie. And don't get sidetracked by the title. It's not a negative connotation of influencing people. It's how can you go out there and be better at communicating, right? Because if we are not good with humans, we're not going to enjoy life as much. They are everywhere. I grew up as a shy kid and didn't really feel like I had communication skills. And when I got my hands on this book, I can tell you it changed everything for me in my life, not just to be happier around people, but just be more fulfilled and more excited and find more joy in life. So those are two books that I absolutely, absolutely hands down recommend. And a couple other cool things about Audible is, as we mentioned, there's thousands of titles you can choose from there. And the cool part is you get to listen wherever you want. You can actually download the audiobook to your phone and you can listen to it while you're on a plane. You can pause it, you can come back to it on another device and resume right where you left off. And it's all done from an app from your phone. So they make it really simple. You listen to it anytime you want. I often will listen to it while I'm cooking food or going on a walk or if I'm working out. It's just an easy way to really learn more while doing a bunch of other random things that I do in my daily life. So absolutely recommend checking them out. And for all of you that have not checked out Audible yet, what we're going to be doing today on the episode, which is really cool, is we're going to get you a free audiobook with a 30-day trial membership of Audible. All you need to do is just go to audibletrial.com/findingdirection and you're going to get one free audiobook. So, you know, again, I would check out The Defining Decade. It's a big book helping you figure out what you want to do with your life. And also another incredible one, a must check out, is How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie. Again, just go to audibletrial.com/findingdirection. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to Finding Direction. This week, I'm sitting down with the real Jason Duncan. And this conversation, honestly, was a blast. Jason is just an incredible, incredible human being. And to paint a little bit of his journey for you, he's someone who went from being a pastor to a teacher to now someone who is an extremely successful entrepreneur. And it all started when he got laid off as a teacher. So he's been through quite an interesting journey. I know you're going to get so many lessons from it. We talk about how your life is like the alphabet, A to Z, and how if you follow the journey, if you follow the letters, it will unfold beautifully. We also talk about how you can seamlessly, gracefully transition into the next phase of your life rather than having resistance, allowing yourself to naturally flow into the direction that you know you are supposed to go. So you're going to get so many lessons from this. If you haven't yet, please go to the iTunes store, leave us a review there. If you listen on Spotify, leave us a rating. That's how we get this in front of more people and impact more lives. So without any further ado, here is the real Jason Duncan. Jason Duncan, welcome to the show, my man. I'm pumped to have you here. Thanks for joining us today.
Glad to be here, man. It's a good day.
Absolutely. Every day is a good day when you wake up, right? So,
yeah, not bad. I've had some bad days, though.
That's fair. Well, let's kick this thing off. If you would give our listeners kind of an idea of like, what was life like for little Jason as you were a kid running around in life? Fill us in a little bit.
So I had a great family. Mom and dad are fantastic. They've been married to be 50 years this year.
Wow.
So they've, great family life. Had a little brother 3 years younger than me. We were very involved in our church. My family raised me to follow Jesus as I still do to this day. Yeah. So that was always a part of my life. I spent a lot of time as a kid, riding bikes in the neighborhood, playing. I played baseball for about 10 years and nice. Soccer and, did that kind of thing. So it was my childhood was great. There was no tragedy, nobody, yeah. My grandfather passed away when I was about 12. That was pretty sad. But, beyond that, I live a charmed life, man. So as a kid, it was all good. I was involved in my youth group, involved in, I started working when I was 16, I think 15. I had my first job when I was 15. So, yeah, just a pretty normal American childhood. No, nothing special or new or out of the ordinary.
Love it. And so as you grew up, did you have an idea of like, when I grow up, this is what I'm going to be when I get older? Like, did you have that or? What was your thought as you grew up?
When I was a kid, I was probably, I've got a picture of this somewhere, but I was probably 2, maybe 3. My dad had a Volkswagen Beetle. It was orange.
Nice.
And there's a picture of me standing on the front seat, holding the steering wheel, looking through the windshield. And I'm just got this huge smile on my face. But he had that car for a long, long time. And I remember drawing pictures of it as early as I can remember. And I remember loving to draw cars. And so for my entire childhood, teenage years, I loved drawing cars. And I actually got, my desire was to go to college and become an industrial designer so that I could be a car designer. That's what I wanted to do. Now, as a kid, of course, I wanted to play professional baseball and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
That's one of those kid dreams that you don't really think about. But I remember there was I wanted to draw cars. I wanted to design cars. And so I got accepted to two art colleges and was that's where I was going to go. But I didn't do that. I didn't go there. And that's kind of where the story changes. But there's one little kind of thing I'll put in here. In fourth grade, Miss Hickman's class at White House Elementary School, she was my favorite teacher I ever had. Her husband was our veterinarian. So I got to see her out of school. And I thought that was the weirdest thing in the world to see your teacher out of school. But I remember writing on a piece of notebook paper what I wanted to be when I was growing up in fourth grade. Now, in fourth grade, I didn't know you could design cars for a living. I didn't know that was an option. I didn't know that was an option. But I remember drawing on there that I wanted to drive a Jeep. I wanted to be a farmer and I wanted to be a teacher. So I don't know why that memory sticks into my head, but I remember drawing it on the paper. I drew a little Jeep. And I drew a farm and I drew like a classroom. I wanted to be a teacher. And out of those three things, I technically own a Jeep because I bought one for my daughter. So it's sitting out in the driveway. But it's hers. Nice. If I own it, she drives it. I did become a teacher and I have no desire to be a farmer.
Very interesting. Interesting how some of those insightful moments from a kid like really paint some truth in it.
Yeah.
Right. So, okay. So you're inspired to draw cars, to go design this. So did you end up going to art school? Did you not go to art school or kind of fill us in on how the story started to change? So it seems like.
So going back to my, my childhood, the formative years, my teenage years, I was, I went to church camp, as a counselor pretty much every summer that I was, when I became old enough to be a counselor. And then the one week of the summer that I was the camper. So I was at church camp, for two summers. Between my sophomore and junior year, then my junior and senior year of high school.
Gotcha.
I did all summer at camp and it was fantastic. I had great friends and did that type of thing. But I remember there was the summer between my junior and senior year of high school. I'd already been accepted to the two art colleges as a junior, very excited. And that was my path. I was ready to do it.
Yeah.
Well, there was one night, we all the counselors, the kids were already in the dorms, they were asleep, and all the counselors were hanging outside by the fire pit. We're just whatever, doing whatever counselors do late at night. teenagers. And I remember I remember that feeling. I was laying on my back looking up at the stars, and I was thinking, like, this is what I want to do. This is the type of life I want to live. I want to live a life where I'm pouring into people, or I'm helping these kids. And it's fun, of course, but I couldn't see myself getting that type of life as a car designer. I just didn't think that would be the fulfillment that I really wanted. So it was really there that I made the decision. I'm going to go into ministry. I'm going to do this thing. So I went back home at the end of the summer.
And you've been accepted to all these schools.
Yeah, I've been accepted to two art colleges. And one of those was the college, like, it's a very prestigious college in Detroit called the Center for Creative Studies College of Art and Design. Very great industrial design college, because GM, Ford, Chrysler, everybody's right there. I've been accepted. And so I came home from summer camp, and I told my parents, I said, you know, I feel like I'm, you use that word call loosely, but I felt like, I feel called into ministry. So I applied to Lipscomb University, which is a private Christian university here in the Nashville, Tennessee area, for their youth ministry program. Got accepted, got a scholarship, and that's why I didn't go to art school.
Dang. So for you, was it a difficult decision? I mean, because if you've had this dream to, you know, go design cars, and it's something you've been inspired to do, you know, I think we all get moments of inspiration in our life where we go, you know what, maybe I do want to do this other thing with my life. But I think it's one thing to say, like, to follow that inspiration versus, well, yeah, but, you know, I already have this plan. I'm already accepted. You know, it makes sense. There's a proven path I can take in life. So was it just easy for you to follow the inspiration? You just said, you know what, I'm called. I'm going to listen to God and just go. Or
yeah, it was pretty easy. I don't think I ever regretted it. You know, I was in Detroit. I actually have a client now who is in his office in Detroit, and went to Detroit for the first time 2 weeks ago. I'd never been and wasn't impressed with the city necessarily. I mean, obviously the outskirts is a little different, but I wasn't really impressed with it. Now that's not true. The downtown area that we went in to have dinner, we had dinner at some of these amazing places, but generally speaking, I don't think I'd wanted to live in Detroit. But no, I don't regret it. I mean, sometimes I wonder what life would have been like otherwise, but yeah. No, I don't
always can wonder. Yeah, I think it's interesting that when you have those moments of inspiration, it's like if you listen to it, it like you really do flow. You know what I mean? And your life flows. But if you get those moments of inspiration and you deny them, it's almost like you get into this like squirming battle where there's like this inspiration and you're like, yeah, but no, but yeah, but no. And it's like it creates this internal conflict, which affects every other area of your life if you really think about it.
Yeah.
So I think it is important to follow that inspiration. And I love that you were like, I'm just going to follow it. Not going to question it, just going to go. And I think sometimes when we do that, that's when the most beautiful things unfold in our life.
That's right. I agree 100%.
Yeah. So you follow the ministry path. You're doing that for a while and you're finding your direction. You're doing that. Eventually, at some point within being in ministry and being a pastor, you hit another roadblock. You go, okay, there's some new direction that I need to take. Like this isn't it anymore. So kind of fill us in on that next sort of like redirect in your life.
So in 2005, Hurricane Katrina hit New Orleans. And I think most people remember that it was a pretty devastating event. The city was decimated. And I, in 1997, my wife and I had lived just an hour north of New Orleans, and I was a youth minister at a church down there. So I had connections. I had friends down there. So when it hit, I reached out to my friends I hadn't talked to in a long time. You know, that had been, you know, 8 years had passed since I'd been down there. So I reached out to them and I said, hey, do you guys need some help? Can we come down there and I could bring a van load of people from our church, because I was a pastor here in the Nashville area. So I can bring a van load of people down there and we'll work for a week or so. And they said, yes, it'd be fantastic. So I get down there and what I find is that one of my good friends, who was a deacon at the church at the time when I was there, kind of the guy that I reached out to, was now no longer at that church, had left that church. He had actually started a church, which was like, I would have never imagined in a million years that he would have, he would have tried to do that, but he did. And all these people that I had known from 8 years ago who certainly loved Jesus and they were followers, but like it wasn't something they talked about all the time. It didn't really affect their attitude. Maybe that's not a fair way to say it, but they didn't talk about it. It wasn't verbalized outside of church services. And I think most people who are, you know, they understand what I'm talking about. But now, like, it was, Jesus was everything. They were about, they were all about it. They were talking about Jesus and the Holy Spirit, what was going on in their lives and how they were affecting the community. I'm like, what happened? These people are completely different. And I was at that time very disenfranchised with the institutional church. I had been a pastor at this church for a while, and I was just getting more and more just burned out and not happy with what was going on. I was like, this is this is not what I feel like Jesus wanted us to do. And then I see all these people, I'm like, whoa. So on the drive home, it was a 9-hour drive home. I made the decision. I'm done. I'm not staying in this church anymore. I'm not going to do this. I'm going to go start my own church, or, you know, do what, whatever. I can't do this anymore. Made that decision on the 9-hour drive back home. Well, then of course my question was, well, how in the world am I going to afford life? Now, how am I going to pay the bills? Cause I mean, my church was paying me fair wage and I had a car. They let me drive, and like my wife stayed home with the kids and everything was okay. But if I go start my own thing, you know, how's that going to work? And so I was praying about this, and I really felt God kind of opened the doors for me to do the thing that I wrote on the piece of paper when I was a fourth grade student. I'm going to go be a teacher. And so I applied to Lipscomb University, which is where I started my undergrad. I actually didn't finish there, but I applied to Lipscomb for, they had a Master's of Arts in Learning and Teaching, which is a brand new program. They were just starting in like 2 weeks, after I got home, they were starting this program, and I enrolled. I said, I'm not going into debt for it. Somehow, Father showed me a way to get friends and family of mine to believe in what I was doing and gave me money to pay for school. I enrolled. And within, you know, I finished that program within 18 months, left the institutional church and ended up not starting a normal church like I thought I was going to. Went into teaching school and I fell in love teaching. I mean, that's, it was the best. I only did it for 4 years, but it was the coolest and best time of my life.
That's so cool. What, I'm curious, what is your, like, when you have to make a decision in your life, what does your decision process look like? Because I mean, even if we continue to go down your story, which we will, what I've noticed in your life is you've continued to like pivot in your life or change directions over and over and over, but you've done it in a really like graceful way that I think's allowed you to do things that you love when you're supposed to do those things in your life. And then you allow yourself to like gracefully move on to the next thing and do that and love that for that season and gracefully move on to the next. So like, what does your decision process look like when you start to realize, okay, there's some change that's coming in my life. I need to make a decision. Can you kind of walk us through what that process looks like for you?
Well, I wish I had a great answer that people would want to write down and re-listen to, but I don't. I first of all, I love change. Like I genuinely enjoy change in my life. There are things I don't ever want to change. Like I love my wife. We've been married almost 27 years. I'm never changing that. But I love change. I thrive on it. I enjoy it. So for me to move to different places, live in different places, do different things, have different jobs, I'm cool with it. It's always been easy for me. But the decision-making process mainly revolves around, how's this going to affect my family? How's this going to affect our ability to provide for each other? That was always kind of the decisions that I would make. So anytime I took a new opportunity at a new church, or, you know, I worked in two different schools when I took different opportunities, how's this going to affect my family? Am I going to, is it going to provide for quality of life? And now my decisions that I'm making are still revolve around those same concepts, but they're also bigger than me now. I don't just make a decision, how does this affect me? You know, I'm in the process of buying a motorcycle dealership. And as I'm thinking about this, I literally pray about this every day. Like I want this acquisition to go smoothly. So it's a blessing to the people selling it, blessing to the employees that I'm going to take and I'm going to assume, and also blessing to me and my family. Obviously I got to make money at it. I'm not doing it for a hobby, but I want to, you know, so my decision-making is a little, it's kind of the same, but I've added an extra layer. I want to make impact. I want to make impact.
Okay.
What's up, my friends? It's Stu, and I have big news. After interviewing hundreds of people on their journey in life and experiencing my own journey to a life full of fulfillment and passion, I finally put together a special guide just for you. And it's called 3 Steps to Finding Direction in Under 10 Minutes. And you can go grab it at findingdirectionuniversity.com/3steps. If you're feeling lost and like you're not quite sure what you want to do with your life, this guide will help you figure out exactly what your next step is in just under 10 minutes. You're not alone in this journey, and I'm excited to guide you through this process until you've truly created a life that you love. Go grab the guide at findingdirectionuniversity.com/3steps. I look forward to helping you create your dream life.
So, let's say someone's listening to this and they're going, okay, Jason, I'm glad that you love change, but I do not like change. What advice would you have for someone? Because, you know, I think something someone once told me is they said change is inevitable, but growth is optional, right? And it's like change is going to happen in our life, but sometimes I think we can fight that change. So what advice would you give to someone that maybe doesn't like change, but, you know, change is a part of life? So like, how can someone start falling in love with change more, or being more open to it at least?
Well, I guess the rude answer is you get over it. I mean, change is going to happen. You're going to have to deal with it. Like, that's the rude answer, but that's not the way I would normally answer that. What I would generally say to people is kind of talk them through, well, let's look at our options here. Okay. You're at position A, you know, and you've been in position A for a while, but you're not happy with it. Like, there's something about it you don't like. And I'm offering you a position B, and that's going to require some changing, maybe a new location. Maybe it's a new occupation. Maybe it's a new wardrobe. Maybe it's a new set of friends, whatever it happens to be. I'm offering you option B, but it's going to take change. If you hold back and say, well, I'm not willing to go through the change, well, then shut up. I don't want to hear you talking about you don't like where you're at. In order to get from where you're at, and if you don't like it, it's going to take change to get to the new place. You've got to be mature enough to understand that that happens. I mean, the change that, and it's kind of a cliche, but the change that a caterpillar goes through to become the butterfly, I don't imagine that's a very comfortable situation with the caterpillar trying to push his way through this cocoon. It's not a comfortable thing. And if anybody helps you push through it, then you'll never fly. You've got to get over it. You got to do it. So I think if you're comfortable where you are and you're completely content with that, and you have it, whatever that word enough means, if you have enough, okay, well, chill out, man, you're good. But if you are sitting in that place and you don't like it, but you're not willing to take the changes to get there, I don't even want to talk to you. Like, I have no time for you.
Yeah.
Because you're not being intellectually honest.
Yeah. That's sometimes we all just need some honest truth, right?
Yes.
So you're not happy, you're complaining. Well, yeah. Don't talk about it. So I think one thing that's interesting too is it's like, I was listening to some the other day and was talking about like choice theory, right? And it's like, okay, if you're dissatisfied with where you're at in your life, you're feeling some internal resistance to do something, and you don't have this enough that you're talking about, like, making no choice is a choice. You know what I mean? By saying like, I'm not happy and I'm not going to, you know, make this change to do this other thing. Like, the choice you're making is I'm going to stay dissatisfied. I'm going to stay unhappy. I'm going to stay not content. And like, I am choosing that for my life. And I think when you can understand, like, you can choose that, or like you said beautifully, or there is an option B that can be a happier choice. Yeah, there may be more unknowns with that, but you're choosing to at least change the current situation you're in. So I think it's important for people to know that too. It's like, even if you say, well, I'm not gonna think about it, I'm not gonna, you know, decide yet, you made it. No decision is a decision, you know?
Yep. And it's the weak decision. You know, it comes from a place of weakness, you know, and I think that I guess I look at it this way. You know, we all start in position A, and position Z is where we really need to be. That's the end of everything. That's where our fulfillment totally happens. Life is no better than that moment. Like, it's the pinnacle of everything we want to achieve and be in life. But there is no short trip from A to Z. There's a 24 letters in between that you have to go through. Your brain can't even comprehend Z. It doesn't even, you don't even know what that's like. And so sometimes you're just sick thinking about B and you're scared to get to B. I'm like, man, think there's so many more steps beyond this. I would never have thought in a million years when I started teaching school I only, like I said, I only taught for 4 years. I thought I would be a teacher forever. I got my master's. I was going to be an administrator. That's what I thought. And of course, the Great Recession comes in, budget cuts. I don't have tenure. Now I'm forced out of the classroom, not by my choice. And actually, I was a very good teacher, the number one teacher in the county, actually. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't even based on my lack of performance. It was just a budget thing. I would have never thought in a million years that moment would have led me to become a millionaire, that led me to become a person who's impacting the lives of literally hundreds and maybe even thousands of entrepreneurs all over the planet through my coaching, through my content creation. I would have never thought that would happen. Now, I'm certainly not at Z. I'm not there. I know that I'm not there, but I'm somewhere in between, and I sure as hell ain't sitting on A.
Yeah. That was so beautifully articulated. That was like, I could visualize what you were saying. That was beautifully said. So if we go to your teacher life then for a second, right? 4 years, you're rocking, you're rolling. Sounds like you're loving it. You're doing exceptionally at it. You're doing so exceptionally at it that you're being recognized for how exceptional you are at it. And like you said, the Great Recession comes. They go, Jason, sorry, we're going to have to let you go. Sort of two things that I'm curious. One, why didn't you just go get another teaching job at another district or another school?
Well, that's what I wanted to do. That was my number one choice. The day that I received the information from my principal that my contract would not be renewed was a pretty dark day. I was very disappointed, but he had laced it with this, we'll help you find another position somewhere in the district if it's possible. And I thought, okay, well, maybe. There weren't any. As a matter of fact, I even went back and got another certification in physical education just to add to thinking, because I could get that pretty easily. Maybe I could, nothing. I couldn't get a job. I applied for jobs and I forget how many districts in the Middle Tennessee, Nashville area, had interviews, and it either would, the doors would close and they didn't hire somebody, or they'd hire, there was one job I lost an opportunity to someone who graduated from Harvard. Like, how do you compete with that? I don't know how to compete with that. Yeah. I didn't have Harvard. I had Lipscomb, so, which is not a bad school. It's just not Harvard.
Right.
But, but the doors just kept slamming. I could probably have moved, but at this point we were pretty firmly entrenched in our city. Our kids were in school.
Like, yeah.
I was not really interested in moving. So that's when I became an accidental entrepreneur.
Okay. And so my second question, because I didn't realize you did so much, like you were pretty committed to saying, like, I still want to teach, and you were pursuing it and you're doing all that. And it's interesting how when it's time for one door to close, right, there really are signs that say, nope, you didn't get this one. You didn't get that one, right? It's like you're being guided. And I'm curious for you, when you became this accidental entrepreneur, what made you pick of all things to say, I'm going to the light business, right? Like what made you pick that as your sort of next North Star? Man.
So if I could go, but taking what I know now and going back 12 years, I'd have never started a lighting company. I would never have done it, but it was a perfect thing at the time and has been very beneficial to me and my family and dozens of my employees. So, that have worked for me over the years. So here's kind of the I'll make it fast. I started the company with a friend of mine who was interested in building a hydrogen generator. And we did it kind of as a like a shed project. It wasn't ever intended to be a business. Huh. And we named the company Future Vision Energy. And so we did that. This actually started before I knew I wasn't going to teach anymore. We started that before and it was, we had fun with it. We screwed around with it. And he was the brains behind it. I was the guy, the sales guy. I could figure stuff out. I could go get the money if we needed money. So fast forward a year after that happened, that's when I found out I wasn't going to teach anymore. And I think, okay, we're never going to make any money with this Future Vision Energy, with this thing that we're doing, hydrogen or ethanol. That's never going to work. But what in the energy space, because that was getting hot, like around 2010, 2011, that was getting hot. I said, what could I do in the energy space with a company already called Future Vision Energy that would work? And LED lighting came across as an idea. And I thought, you know what? I'm a really good salesperson. I could probably sell this. And that's why I chose lighting. It was opportunity.
That's crazy. And then if I have your story correct, you gave yourself an allotted time, right? You're like, I'm going to give myself X amount of months. And if my memory serves me correct, it was what, a handful of days before you were, before that date that you landed, I think it was what, a multi-million dollar contract.
That is true. So I got the news from my principal in April. that I wouldn't be teaching in August. And so August 15th was going to be my last paycheck from the county. And gotcha. So I kind of committed. I was playing. I was kind of hedging my bet. So I was still applying for, at first I started applying for teaching jobs, and that quickly I realized that ain't gonna happen. Yeah. So then I started applying for corporate gigs as a salesperson, recruiter, whatever it happened to be. Gotcha. So I was doing that, and I thought I'm gonna sell, try to get LED lighting sold too. So that whole summer I'm doing this dual thing back and forth, back and forth. And I remember this one company that wanted to hire me as a recruiter, and I just kept delaying because I was working on this big deal.
Yeah.
I thought, man, I can't take this job, you know, and they'll pay me, you know, 80 grand a year, whatever it is. And then I miss out on this thing.
Right.
So I remember that final conversation I had with him when he invited me in for like a third interview. And I said, hey, can we wait till next week? And he goes, this sounds to me like you don't want the job. So the offer is withdrawn. So that was that door shut. So I told my wife, I said, you know, here's what I'm going to do. My last check is on August the 15th. If I don't make some money by then, I'll be done. I'll quit the business thing. I'll go get a job at Starbucks or something. I'll figure it out. And on August the 12th, 3 days before the deadline, I went up to the elevator to the third floor at a hospital, pitched for what turned out to be ultimately about a $2.3 million contract. And they bought it. And that was a happy ride back down the elevator.
It
was pretty cool. It was a pretty cool experience.
That's amazing, man. I love it's so cool to hear just the journey of all of it. And, you know, I know you said if you went back, you would have never gotten to lights. And so as we kind of, you know, wind things down here, I'm curious, as you go into, because I know you have multiple businesses, you do a lot of different things. You're very successful at all of them. I mean, you crush it in life. And so I'm curious, like, as you pick the next things that you're going to do in your life, or it's the next business, the next, you know, like, direction, as you continue to reroute yourself as an entrepreneur, how do you now go about picking, like, the vision, the idea, the market that you're going to go into when you start something new? I'm curious, like, you know, because, I mean, you seem, from getting to know you and from talking with you, you do a lot of things that you really enjoy, right? It's not like you're starting a new business and you're like, oh, this is going to suck, but hey, I can make some money. It's like, you're like, no, what's going to excite me? What's going to be fun? So, like, how do you go about that process of figuring out what that next thing's going to be?
Well, when I started my coaching company, when I exited the lighting company without selling it in January 2020, and I started a coaching company, that was kind of the first thing. And then I started an e-commerce company, and I started adding primarily as a way, like, how can I make money? And not in the way that you might think, because I'd made pretty good money through the lighting company. But I was like, how can I make money? And the reason I want money now is because of impact. It's not because of things. As a matter of fact, you know, I live in a rental house. I drive modest cars. Everything's paid for. I don't have this lavish lifestyle, but I got access to capital, got access to things. But so now it's no longer about chasing the shiny thing that I want to prove that I'm the Instagram guru and I'm an influencer and I got a Lamborghini. I don't care about that anymore. I do want to make money though, because I want to make impact. One of the things I've been wanting to do for a long, long time, that I've got this nonprofit thing concept rolling around my brain that I just haven't had the time or money to pull off yet. Still don't have the time or money to pull off, but I'm thinking, man, if I can acquire this business or start this business and run this business, you know, if I can bring in $1 million a year in disposable income, you know, is it going to change my lifestyle? Probably a little bit. I might buy a newer car, you know, I might buy another motorcycle, but what I'm able to do now is I'm able to, okay, now I have that elusive time that we all need to, and the money, of course, to go do the thing that I need to do. Cause money gives you time. Money buys time. Money is a renewable resource that you lose it, you get more time, you don't. And, you know, here I am, you know, I'm 47. I got plenty of working years left in my life, plenty of activity, but I'm also at this place where it's like, okay, I'm halfway to 90. I got to figure this thing out. I got to figure something out. So when I make my decisions now, I look for things that can make me money. Lots of money if I can, not for my own personal gratification, but because I can make impact. And then I'm also looking for stuff that I enjoy, because I did the lighting thing for so long and I never enjoyed lights, still don't to this day. I loved running the company and I loved my employees, but dude, I would have rather had a coffee shop. That I could enjoy and get into, or a cigar shop or whatever. That would have been fun, but lighting, no.
Yeah. So cool, man. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story with us and the beautiful journey you've been through and all the lessons. I'm curious, you know, if people want to get more info on you, see what you're up to, where's the best place for them to find you, hang out with you, all that good stuff?
Go to therealjasonduncan.com. That's my hub for everything online. And if you look me up on any of the socials, it's therealjasonduncan. You can follow me on Instagram and LinkedIn are the two places I hang out the most. I've got all the other places too, but I don't really, I don't invest a lot of energy into those things. But Instagram and LinkedIn, I'm there, therealjasonduncan and therealjasonduncan.com.
Perfect. All right. We'll put all that in the show notes so it's nice, easy access. Last question I do have for you. We ask this to all our guests because we want to help people find direction here, but we really believe in taking action, right? Not sit on your couch and hope all your dreams come true, but like you got to actively pursue a life that excites you. And so I would be curious, what would you say is one thing someone listening to this can do in the next 24 to 48 hours to start finding direction in their life?
Hire a coach. And I know that sounds terribly self-serving because I am one, but I didn't hire my first coach until 2017. I started the company in 2010. In 2017, life completely changed for me. 100%, no doubt. I'd become a, you know, pretty, I would say wealthy, but I'd become a millionaire as a result of building a business that had lots of value. But it wasn't until I hired the coach in 2017 that I really saw potential and things completely changed forever. You can hire a coach in the next 24 to 48 hours and he or she, if they're good, will change your life.
Love it. Love it. Love it. Well, Jason, thank you again so much for joining us today. We massively appreciate it. And I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day.
Thanks, man.
Congratulations, my friend, on crushing it through another episode here on the Finding Direction podcast. Give yourself a pat on the back. Give yourself a round of applause because you are someone who is not willing to settle for a life less than one that lights your soul on fire, that excites you, brings you fulfillment and happiness, all of those at the same time. So congratulations through crushing it here. I hope you got a massive amount of value from the real Jason Duncan. There were so many nuggets in there. Make sure you go out and apply those in your life. And I will see you on the podcast next time. Take care.